Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
At IHM VCU, we've always been here for you. You are and always will be our top priority. We care about your financial health, and we are here. IHM VCU is a proud supporter of WQPT.
Public Affairs programming on WQPT is brought to you by the Singh Group at Merrill, serving the wealth management needs of clients in the region for over 35 years.
Iowa lawmakers getting ready for the 2025 session. How will your money be spent? And getting ready for a murder mystery that you'll laugh at in the cities. Iowa lawmakers will open the 2025 session on Monday, January 13th. Republicans will have supermajorities in both houses. There's a Republican governor and a conservative-leaning state Supreme Court, a political trifecta in Iowa. Iowa Republicans are already forecasting a bit of what's to come regarding taxation, budgeting, education, and social issues. And we talk with Bettendorf Republican State Representative Gary Moore, who's also the chair of the House Appropriations Committee. The Iowa Revenue Estimating Conference is projecting that Iowa will bring in $687 million less. That's not right. Unexpected, right. But still a sizable figure.
Right. That's right, Jim.
What are you going to do?
Well, let me say this was planned. For too many years, we have taken too much money out of the taxpayers' pockets for taxes in Iowa, which is why we started to lower income taxes in the state of Iowa. That's why we did away with retirement income taxes for senior citizens. Let me put it this way to you. This coming year, we will end the year with a $2.2 billion surplus. We have another $1 billion in the bank in savings accounts, which we're required by law to have. We have an additional $3.7 billion in a taxpayer relief fund. So we have between $6 and $7 billion in the bank, which is why we decided that's too much money to have, which is why we decided to start to lower taxes. So some people are jumping out a window saying, we're going to spend maybe $200 million more than what we take in next year. Do you know how many years we can fund an annual budget of taking in $200 million less than what we spend? When you have $6 to $7 billion in the bank, we can go 30 to 35 years at that rate. If we increase spending and spend $500 million more than what we take in, we can fund the government for 12 years. The point is, we have too much money in the bank, and we need to get it back to Iowans. And there's several ways you can do it. You can spend more on programs. You can give it back to the taxpayers. And we've chosen to do a little bit of both. Our budget goes up a little bit every year. But with those numbers, and the reason I mention it to you that way, we can continue to overspend $200 million a year and have enough money to fund that government for the next 30 or 35 years.
Well, and as you pointed out, I mean, the income tax drops to 3.8% January 1st.
Right.
It did already. And the governor has made it clear that she would like to see 0%. I mean, do you still see that that is what you're aiming for?
Well,
and the 3.8% is sooner than originally proposed.
Yeah, we sped up a little bit. Again, when you have $6 to $7 billion in the bank, and you have a $9 billion budget, that's too much of the taxpayers' money to have in reserves, which is why we're doing all of this. As far as doing away with income taxes, let me put it to you this way, and I've heard the governor say that. We have three main sources of income in Iowa. Personal income tax, that generates about 40% of our revenue. Sales tax, that generates about 40% of our revenue. And corporate taxes, which represents about 20% of our revenue. If you do away with that personal income tax and that's 40% of your revenue. And we have a $9 billion budget. That does away with roughly $3.6 billion, 40% of $9 billion, of revenue. I don't think we're in a position to do that at this point. So I think we're going to continue to have that as a goal, as the governor's mentioned, to ultimately do away with state income taxes. But at this point, we're not able to do that overnight. Because we'd have to raise sales taxes, or we'd have to raise corporate taxes to balance the budget.
Well, and we're seeing corporate taxes being reduced as well in
Iowa, right.
which was a major effort to keep, retain, and lure new industry here.
That's exactly right.
Do you think that is working so far?
I think it's a little too soon to know.
Right.
I think it will, absolutely. Just like I sponsored the bill to do away with the income taxes for retirees. Having lived here over 40 years, too many of my wife Jane and my friends came here as we did in the 80s, raised their families, built whatever wealth they had, and retired and moved to Florida, or moved to Illinois, or moved to Texas, where they don't have state income taxes.
For retirees.
That was the impetus for me. We're losing too many Iowans and their wealth once they retire. But Jim, the surprising thing to me is the number of calls I received from people, and this I didn't expect. People called and said, Gary, my wife and I grew up in Iowa. We grew up on small farms. We left Iowa and built our career, raised our families, and thought we were going to have to stay like in Illinois because there's no tax on retirement income. But now that you've done away with retirement income taxes for retirees, we're moving back to Iowa to retire. And I'll bet I've had 50 calls. So that was a pleasant surprise.
Democrats, though, do point out when it comes to, like you said, tax and spend, is that when it comes to living in Iowa, the way the policies of the Reynolds administrations have worked is that there's a big pay disparity. There's a huge disparity in salaries. Young people don't like the political climate, and they're leaving anyhow. There's cuts in education, in higher education, which young people want, and that doesn't foster well for the future of Iowa. What do you say to that, about those concerns, about the reinvestment part?
First of all, there have been no cuts in higher education or education. We spend about $1 billion of our state budget on higher education. It has gone up every year. It's important. I was in higher ed as an administrator. That is important to me to continue to fund education. We increased our budget 4% last year. So there have been no cuts since Republicans have been in control of the legislature of the state budget. We increase it every year. As far as salaries, I don't think that's changed in the last number of years. People have always moved in and out of Iowa for a variety of reasons. Some people move out because of salaries. Some people move in because of family. That hasn't changed. I don't believe the fact that the legislation that we've passed, hopefully over time, will bring more people into this state if taxes are lower, if they can retire here with no income tax. It's designed to attract more people over the long term. And I think that's exactly what it'll do.
You bringing up education, the House is creating a new committee for higher education.
Right.
What do you hope is the goal of that?
Well, I would hope the goal of it will be the increased access to higher education. I don't really know. I'm not on that committee.
Right.
I don't really know if they have issues that they want to discuss. I'll be watching it as well. But my hope is that a major purpose of it is to increase access for Iowans to higher education opportunities throughout the state, no matter where you live.
Because the new chairman, correct me if I'm wrong, is also one of the leading advocates to dismantling DEI, the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion programs that Iowa lawmakers have already started to do. Does that worry you? I mean, like you said, you were very active. Community college, you're very active in secondary education.
Yeah. Does it bother me that they did away with the DEI?
Let's start with that, or then it will continue to be diminished even more.
Well, I support the DEI in concept. What I don't support is the millions of dollars that higher education institutions are spending on those issues. I would rather see those millions of dollars go to student scholarships, invest in new programs. We still have a workforce shortage in this state. And I am, among many others, want to spend more and more of our tax money to fill those jobs, train more people in nursing, healthcare industries, teachers. That's where I want to see more of an emphasis. And I think that might be one of the emphasis the new higher ed committee is going to look into.
But we talked to a Quad City DEI facilitator who says that DEI is so critically important to that, is to make sure that minorities and underrepresented sections of our population do get those opportunities.
Well, and I guess I would assume somebody who's working in that area would probably say that, Jim. I think it can be accomplished without spending millions of dollars of tax money. Particularly at our region institutions. And so I support the effort to rein that back in. And the directive was to redirect that money to student scholarships and workforce training programs.
The other, once again, critics, and we don't know what the Committee on Higher Education is going to do,
right.
But there's also a fear that it's going to turn a Republican state, will become more like Florida, where they're really going after how children are taught, yeah. Or that these liberal institutions are too liberal,
yeah.
And that's what's going to happen to Iowa, Iowa State, and Northern Iowa University.
Well, I would caution your listeners. I get a lot of calls. In the legislative process, in democracy, we have 100 members of the Iowa House, 50 members of the Senate. Every one of those members, including me, can introduce legislation. And people are always calling me, scared to death when they hear that so-and-so introduced a bill to do thus and so. Well, don't jump out any six-story windows. They might be introducing that for a variety of reasons, and it may not go anywhere. So I understand people's concerns. But let's watch the committee. Let's see what it does. Because at this point, I don't think there's any preconceived plan other than more emphasis on higher education. And again, I hope they spend more time on access, creating new workforce programs. We've got to get more people trained for the jobs that we have in Iowa that currently are going unfilled.
K through 12, you're one of the few Republicans who voted against the school voucher, the investment program. And you're seeing some of the ramifications of what's going on. You're seeing local public schools really worried about a loss of students and a loss of income. Yeah. Are you still waiting for that to fully play out, or do you see damage already occurring?
Well, I voted against that bill for a number of reasons. I represent Pleasant Valley school districts, Bettendorf school districts. So most of the parents in my district send their kids to public schools. I have a large contingent of parents who send their kids to private schools. But the vast majority of my constituents that called me on that issue basically said, Gary, please vote no. We don't want our tax money going to private schools. And so, trying to represent the majority of my students, that was a major reason I voted no. I think it's still too soon. I mean, the ESA, Educational Savings Account Program, won't be fully implemented until after next year. And so we're still in the process of implementing that program. I think it's going to take some time to know. My other concern is certainly about the cost. We didn't redirect those dollars. It's just a new cost, being appropriations chairman. Mm-hmm. I'm concerned about money and spending money, and being a conservative Republican, I'm concerned about adding new expenses to the state tax rolls. And in this program, we added $300 to $400 million a year in cost, and we're adding all those new expenses to the state budget, which kind of goes against my grain. And it's passed, as I've said to leadership. I fought against it. I voted no. I lost. My job as appropriations chair now is to incorporate those costs into the budget, and we will do exactly that.
Talk about cell phones for a moment, too, as long as we're talking about schools. You know that the governor is supposed to make an announcement, right, during her condition of the state, talking for school districts K through 12 to do a greater ban on cell phones. Also legislation, once again, for hands-free, yeah, operation of motor vehicles, which just doesn't seem to be able to pass in the, yeah, Iowa legislature. What, yeah, do you see for both of those issues?
Well, I support both of those issues, Jim. I think there'll be the cell phone issue seems to have a lot of support in our caucus in the House, Republican caucus.
The school cell phone?
Yeah, the school
cell
phone.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you.
I'm sorry. And so I think you'll see some movement on that. Tomorrow I go to Des Moines. Our Republican caucus in the House is meeting, and we're going to discuss our legislative agenda, and I'm sure that will be one of the issues. So I think probably both of those issues will get a fair hearing this legislative session, and there seems to be a lot of support for both.
What's your big priority for 2025, you yourself?
Well, as I've said to Speaker Grassley, it's left up to me. Let's put together a conservative state budget, pass it, and go home. Again, as Appropriations Chair, most of my time there is spent on the budget. Watching revenue, watching expenses, seeing where do we need to redirect dollars to get the best bang for the buck. That's where most of my time. This will be the seventh year he's appointed me Appropriations Chairman. So I enjoy that job. I like to watch taxpayer money, like to be conservative with it. And so that's what most of my time is going to be spent on. I have some issues from my constituents that have individual issues that affect their lives. I'll be working on those as well. And I turned 73 yesterday.
Happy birthday.
Well, thank you. Just listening to the debate about Iowa and the future of Iowa and what do we need to do to change to make Iowa better is one of the most enjoyable things I do in the legislature every year.
But as you well know, with a supermajority with Republicans, you're going to get those bills, and a lot of people are worried that Iowa's just going to turn further and further conservative. Does that bother you when it comes to the social issues? Because like you said, you're a dollar and cents man.
Yeah. No, because again, as I mentioned, all 100 members introduce bills. And there'll be some bills that I'll look at and I'll think, no way, I can't support this bill. And so what I say to your viewers is, just be patient, because many of those bills that people are most concerned about don't really ever go anywhere. There's 1,000 ways to kill legislation in the legislature. A committee may not pass it, a subcommittee may not pass it, it may pass the House, but not pass the Senate, it may pass both, and the governor may veto it. So there's a long way between where we are now and getting some of those bills that scare people enacted. Most of the time I've found 85-90% of them just die on the vine. They don't go anywhere.
Iowa Republican State Representative Gary Moore of Bettendorf, chair of the Iowa House Appropriations Committee. Well, we're already reaching mid-January with plenty of winter activities still ahead of us. And here's some great ideas that will let you enjoy the outdoor as well as the indoor events in our area, thanks to Visit Quad Cities.
Check out the things to do this week in the Quad Cities. Start off with learning how to play hockey at the River's Edge on January 13th. Then you can enjoy a Sherlock Holmes mystery on January 15th at the Circa 21 Dinner Playhouse. Next, watch Hadestown at the Adler Theater on January 15th. Then you can get some laughs in at the Tomfoolery event at the Renwick Mansion on January 17th. Finally, enjoy Barbie night at the Storm hockey game at the Vibrant Arena at the Mark on January 18th. For more events like these, check out our events calendar at visitquadcities.com.
Circa 21 has finished its holiday performances and is ready to stage fresh performances for 2025. Whether it's at the downtown Rock Island Playhouse or at its neighboring Speakeasy stage, Brett Hitchcock of Circa 21 joined us with a preview of what we can expect this year. Tell me what the holiday season was like. I mean, because like December, you guys are crazy.
Yeah.
And now that that's over,
yep.
Is it like a breath of fresh air now?
You know, it's so exciting to have all of those people come in during the month of December. We're used to it. There's such a buzz in the theater that it's always a really magical time. But it's also nice to have a little bit of a break in a sense, you know, because we're going full, you know, we're full performances. We've got multiple shows going that are both doing well. And so it's nice to kind of get a little bit of a breather. But we don't want too much of a breather. You know, we want people to still come, but and we've got some really good things coming up after, you know, that we're into now with Baskerville coming up.
That's
and,
what I was thinking is that, I mean, because we get done with the holidays and all of that, the music, the pageantry and all that, and now you're going to commit murder.
Now we're going to commit murder. That's right. We go from Miracle on 34th Street, which is this family thing. Now we're going to go to a murder show. Right?
What is wrong with you at Circa 21? So January 15th is when you're opening up, and it's Baskerville, a Sherlock Holmes mystery.
Correct.
Which sounds like it is just like the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it ain't.
No.
Because it's a comedy. I think this is amazing.
Yeah. So the gentleman that adapted this, we've done several of his shows before. People really enjoy it a lot. And so it's going to be the storyline's similar. It's still about, you know, the Baskerville family getting picked off, and Sherlock Holmes is going to solve the case. But it's really unique in a sense too, Jim, that there's only five actors in the show, but these five actors are doing almost 40 characters. And so it's just rapid fire in and out, different costumes. I mean, our costume designer is going crazy for this, but there's going to be so many costumes. And I think it's just going to be a really fun kind of lighthearted show that the audience can kind of play along with.
Now, you love casting this, and it's a mix of local and people from out of town.
Correct.
All professionals.
Yep.
Is there a certain challenge? Like you said, a couple of the characters play a number of characters.
Yeah.
Is there a certain challenge to it that they appreciate or they look forward to?
I think that there is, I think that it's something, it's different, it's not the same thing, and it's completely different than what they're used to. And I think they appreciate it. I think in rehearsals, maybe it's a little bit nerve-wracking to, you know, get this down and get the costume changes down. Right. And our costume designer is going to do an amazing job with this, but he's got his hands full right now, too, with all these costumes. But I think it's going to be a wonderful show. And we're really fortunate in the fact that Dr. Corey Johnson, who was on the longtime staff member of St. Ambrose University, is coming back. She now lives in northern Minnesota. She's coming back to direct it for us again, and I think she's going to do an amazing job, and knows our space very well, knows how to play within that room, and so I think she's going to do a great job with it, and should be a wonderful show.
That sounds like fun. That's on the main stage. You also have so much going on at the Speakeasy.
Yeah.
One of them, you always have Viva La Divas.
Yep.
And that's what, January 10th, February 7th, March 7th.
Yep.
That really has caught on.
It really has. You know, I really feel like that in a sense, the Speakeasy kind of brought drag to the mainstream, because before we started doing it, it was mostly just in the alternative clubs around town. And a lot of those have gone away now. And there just wasn't a form for this or a venue to do this in. And so we started doing it about a decade ago. And it's been very, very well received. I mean, yes, we have some comments of some people that that don't appreciate it, and that's fine. I mean, I think that's probably with anything you do. But we have, you know, after a decade, we're still doing shows, and we're still selling out shows. And I think that people really enjoy it. And it's. I think that what happens is you get people that'll come in. It's mostly heterosexual women. That's who we go after. Every once in a while, there'll be a boyfriend or a husband that will come, and for the first hour before the show starts, they'll come in and they'll sit down. They won't look either direction. They'll look straight ahead, like with their blinders on. They might have a beer, and they're probably thinking, what in the world did she bring me? What did she bring me to? But, you know, once you see that, you know, there's nothing offensive in it. They're not pushing a lifestyle or pushing anything. It's just about glitz and glamour and a good time. And oftentimes we find that some of those same guys that may be sitting on their hands during that first hour, by the end of the show, are up and they're tipping the performers as well. So it's not threatening. It's a good time. So.
Well, and Speakeasy is just an interesting concept for you, because it's a smaller venue.
Yeah.
So you can do stuff like improv, because that's always been a big home for improv in Quad Cities.
Yep.
And that's continuing. But you're also doing programs such as Misery from Stephen King.
Absolutely.
The famous movie that we always remember with Kathy Bates and...
James Caan.
I had it earlier.
Yep.
And that's coming up February 21st through the 28th.
It is.
I would expect that really to be an interesting stage to put that on.
Yeah, it's, you know, the Speakeasy is a much smaller space. You know, circa we seat about 320. The Speakeasy seats about 125, and it's one small room. It's one long room. It's
not narrow.
Tiered.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not tiered the way circa is, and it's much more narrow. And so a lot of these kinds of shows play really well on that stage. We do the Rocky Horror Show every October. That's a cast of 10. I mean, and that's a lot going on there, but that stage can handle that. We did a comedy over the holidays this year called Who's Holiday? Which was based on Cindy Lou Who, now grown up, and she's had a rough life. She's likes her drinks and likes her her medicinal drugs, and had a rough go of it. Poor Cindy Lou Who.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
But that show did really well for us too. But it's things that we try to do in there that we probably could not do at Circa.
Right.
You know, stuff like Rocky Horror, we couldn't do that at Circa. Certainly not. Misery. That's certainly not one that we could do at Circa. So it's
At a dinner theater.
No. So we're trying to find, you know, as you mentioned a moment ago, the Speakeasy is kind of branded to be a bit more edgy. right. you know, and that 21 to 50 year old that want to come in and have a good time and party. And that's kind of how we program it. And so, you know, Rocky Horror fits that mold, you know, the Who's Holiday Comedy did, Misery fits that mold. So mm-hmm. we're not going to be doing more mainstream things in there like your Sound of Music or your Fiddler on the Roof or shows that people have heard of, but some of these edgy kinds of theatrical pieces that you don't see a lot around that are what really fit into the business model mm-hmm. for that space.
You're also known for music. Heartbreak Hotel.
Yep.
40 songs.
Oh, yeah.
So there's something from that catalog you're going to love.
Everybody.
That's yep. coming up March through May.
It is. And that was originally called Elvis, which was a huge hit on Broadway. And then the Elvis's family got involved and decided they didn't want it to be called Elvis. And so the name was changed to Heartbreak Hotel.
But it's still
a wonderful
program.
Show. Yeah, still a wonderful show. Yeah, we're really looking forward to that. We have this performer that we just hired to do Elvis. Has performed all over the country, just an amazing performer on stage.
Have you had him here before?
We have not.
Okay, because you've also had Elvis.
We've had some Elvis tribute acts coming in, like one-nighters and a few shows over the years. Not for a while now that we're just strictly an all Elvis show. The last one we did was probably Million Dollar Quartet, but again, that wasn't just Elvis. That was Elvis and Johnny Cash and Carl Perkins and Jerry Lee Lewis. Yeah, so I mean, it wasn't just an all Elvis show. So this is the first one we've been doing in a while that's just Elvis, but I think, you know, our advance on it is really good. And again, if you like that music, you're going to love the show.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to get the kids' musical in.
Yep.
How I Became a Pirate, children's musical, March 25th through April 19th.
Yep.
When you go to Circa, there's a certain audience, but when the kids are there,
yeah.
it's just totally different.
Absolutely.
And so much energy.
Yeah, it really is. And this will be about the third or fourth time that we've done this show. And we were lucky the first time we did it is when the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, the Disney project, were still coming out.
Yeah.
And so we were able to tie into that when there was all of this buzz about pirates. And so it's done really well for us. And we haven't done it now for a few years, but we thought we would bring it back again. It's been a real favorite for people. We've had people that have come back and seen it every time we've done it. And it's a really cute show. It's only an hour long, as most of our kids' shows are. So for the evening shows, we don't allow kids under the age of 4 in just because of the length of time. But these kids shows are about an hour. So you're in and out really quickly. There's no meal, no bar service. So it's a very simple thing. And so if you have younger kids or kids with attention span problems, I mean, this is the perfect thing for that. So they don't have to sit so long or, you know, get rambunctious after 2 or 3 hours and want to go walk around or want mom and dad to take them out and go do something in the lobby instead of sitting watching this show. So
you're all set for 2025.
We're all set. Yeah.
Just open the doors and let people in.
That's the goal. Let's hope, right? The masses will come in, so.
Our thanks to Brett Hitchcock of Circa 21. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.
At IHM VCU, we've always been here for you. You are and always will be our top priority. We care about your financial health, and we are here. IHM VCU is a proud supporter of WQPT.
Public affairs programming on WQPT is brought to you by the Singh Group at Merrill, serving the wealth management needs of clients in the region for over 35 years.